Hey everyone, welcome to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we are working to take faith beyond Sunday mornings. I'm David Bowser, one of the hosts for this new adventure. We're glad that you're joining us, and we hope you enjoy. Thanks.
Well, I've already started recording. All right.
There's going to be lots of editing.
Yeah. All right. Hey everybody, this is Patrick Nazaroff. I am here, as always, with Pastor David. Hi, Pastor David.
Hey everybody, how are we doing today?
And Katie.
Hello.
Hi, Katie Phillips. Do you want Katie? What do you want?
Whatever.
Okay. K-fib.
Not that, like AFib.
I was thinking it's like K-Fed. Wasn't that a rapper, K-Fed? Yeah. I think he married Britney Spears once upon a time.
He certainly did. Yeah. It's Kevin Federline. Yeah.
Oh, there we go. Yes.
That's why I want to bring the podcast. Good. Here we go. Katie's a little sick today.
Yes, I am.
It's not the recording.
Nope, it's me.
Yes. We have her in her own private studio so that she can't contaminate the rest of us. It's safety first, folks.
All right, so last week we talked about kind of this idea of like mystery versus certainty and faith and worship and how we approach that in church. And we wanted to expand on that a little bit this week. So today we're going to talk a little bit about how we measure effectiveness kind of within church, faith, family, how that looks like. So every day I drive to work and I pass multiple churches. You know, like it would be a lot easier commute if I worked at any of them.
Sure.
But we live in Texas, so there's churches literally everywhere. And one church in particular has big signs out front and of their sermon series. And this summer they had a big sign that said like 6 steps to the perfect marriage. That was their sermon series.
Sold.
I'm in. Right?
Yeah. We probably all, you know, could use some help, you know, on marriages. Listeners too. We all could be better. But I was thinking about that a lot of like, well, how do you know what the perfect marriage is? Mm. And how can the perfect marriage even be achieved with just a handful of steps? Like the same number of steps it takes to like make mac and cheese out of a box. You know, how does that happen and equals perfect marriage?
I think it's actually more steps to make mac and cheese than it is to the perfect marriage, according to this this sermon series. Right.
Well, in truth, one of the best things about me, I don't even need to look at the box anymore to make mac and cheese. So
we're in the presence of one of the great ones.
I've so got it down pat. But then I was also thinking, you know, here in America, our definition of perfect marriage would be drastically different than a perfect marriage in Japan or Africa or Israel or early Christian church. They all could have very different views of this. And so when I was thinking about that and translating that, how we approach that in faith, I was like, well, how do we measure if what we're doing as a parent or a church worker or a church is effective? How do we measure if we're heading on the path towards a better church or a better ministry or better parenting or not? And what are the guideposts along the lines to get there? So that's kind of what we're going to be looking at.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking about this a lot, too. I think one of the struggles that I have is that we're so ingrained as a culture to look for winning as the benchmark of success. So, you know, I was an athlete in high school. Not a good one, but, you know, I got the participation ribbon and whatever. And, you know, so if you're in a...
He's a male.
I am. Anyway. So if you're in a track meet, right? I used to run hurdles. If you're in a track meet, there's a very clear definition. This is who's successful because they won. And if you didn't win, then you're not successful yet. And, you know, football games are the same way, right? There's a winner and there's a loser. There's a reason that we as Americans don't like ties, right? You know, ties are just awful because nobody wins and we don't know who is successful. And I think that that sort of mindset, especially in the United States, has come into our churches as well because it's just a part of our culture where we think that success means winning and if we need to know how we win.
Yeah, I think we definitely have this idea of like, prestige, wealth equals a successful life. Yeah. And if you don't have those things, did you have a successful life?
Yeah, sure.
You know, regardless of what anything else happens. Or even like effectiveness or significance equals a successful life. Like if my name is well known, that means I'm successful.
Yeah.
What do you think, Katie?
Right. I'm thinking about churches and how do we measure our success? And I think a lot of times it's put on numbers, like how big is your church? You know, you need to be a mega church and have all of these people.
Yeah.
Or, you know, how much money does your church have?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of times money and attendance is where you measure success in a church.
Yeah.
Like those are the two most obvious signs if you're successful or not.
Yeah. So Katie and I both work in like, Katie works in children's and I work in youth ministry. And so oftentimes when people come into those mm-hmm. programs from the outside, mm-hmm. they really only have one question, mm-hmm. and that's how many kids are there?
Right.
How many kids are in Sunday school? Mm-hmm. How many kids came to youth group? Mm-hmm. That's really the only question that they have about what we're doing and how, if we're doing it well. As right. if me saying 30 or 20 or 40 mm-hmm. even really means anything to them.
Right.
You know, like if that even means anything, they just think, oh, okay, we have numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a goal for a lot yeah. of programming mm-hmm. in church.
Yeah. I think we do that the same thing on Sunday mornings as well. You know, as a pastor, you go around and you introduce yourself. They say, you know, the first question is, where do you serve? And the second question is, what's your worship attendance? I mean, that's what people want to know. And so if you're at a conference with pastors from all over the country, you learn, oh, you're in New Mexico and you have a worship attendance of 200. Oh, you're at a church in Michigan, you have a worship attendance of 500. You know, that's just the first two questions we ask mm-hmm. all the time, because we don't know how else to understand the yeah. community.
Yeah, it's definitely an easy way to measure mm-hmm. because it's, you know, you can put it in an Excel spreadsheet. You can track growth that way. Like last year we had 20. This year we have 25. We're 25% better. You know, yeah. like we're mm-hmm. we're doing better, you know, in our ministry. That's a very easy way to do that.
I'm really impressed by your on-the-fly math skills there. I was still doing that in my head.
Yeah, thank that's you.
Some
yeah.
percentage bigger. Yeah,
I wasn't even doing the math, so I'm just taking your word for it.
Yes, mac and cheese ability and easy fractions. Those are what I, that's what I got going
skills
on. Yes, yeah. So I don't necessarily think numbers in and of themselves are bad to look at. Obviously, no. It's not that, you know, the Bible has benchmark numbers, even in the life of Jesus' mm-hmm. ministry. There are times numbers enter the picture. And so that's not necessarily a wrong way to do that. But what do we think are the pitfalls of measuring success by numbers?
Yeah, well, you know, one thing that we're experiencing as the church right now is that for the last 100 years, especially, you know, so we're talking early 1900s into the late 1900s, we exclusively measured by numbers. Mm-hmm. And what we had was a whole bunch of people who were coming to church, but were not really clear on what it meant to follow Jesus. And so we have what I would call Sunday morning Christians, where you come and you think about Jesus for an hour on Sunday morning, and then you go and you live the rest of your life, and you mm-hmm. live the rest of your week. And what we've been trying to turn back towards in the last 20 to 30 years is really a return to this kind of discipleship model, where following Jesus takes hold in every aspect of our life. And a lot of people now are turning away, or have turned away, because they were never really involved mm-hmm. in that part mm-hmm. of the life of the church. They mm-hmm. were just there for social reasons, or they were mm-hmm. there because that's where the political or the mm-hmm. Cultural connections were. Mm-hmm. I can still remember in Columbus driving around town, and a pastor that I was serving with at the time would point out, all right, that's the church where you go if you want to be elected mayor. That's the church where you want to go if you wow. want to be a part of this. Like, mm-hmm. That's the way that the system worked. Mm-hmm. You know, that those were the movers and the shakers in the community. So yeah. if you wanted to be a part of that process, that's where you needed to be. And yeah. It's not the case anymore, and so mm-hmm. that's all shifting when we've been really just relying mm-hmm. on numbers, and we haven't been thinking about mm-hmm. What does it look like for people to grow,
yeah.
simply our numbers to grow.
Yeah, I think when it comes to that, though, oftentimes most churches, maybe even including our own, mm-hmm. puts the majority of its resources and effort into where the numbers are.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Like here at Lord mm-hmm. of Life, you know, obviously the majority of our effort and resources and staffing goes towards Sunday morning. Because mm-hmm. that's where the numbers are. Mm-hmm. And so that's what probably most churches in America are doing. And so maybe the question, I think, sometimes is to say, is that necessarily the most effective way to produce that discipleship?
Yeah.
Is by putting your money and resources to where the numbers are. And what do we think about that? Like, is that the most effective way, or is there new ways to look at those things?
Well, something that I love about our church and having an outreach as a staff member specifically geared toward outreach is mm-hmm. that it's not just what happens on a Sunday morning all the time. Mm-hmm. I think it's important what happens on a Sunday morning. I think when coming as the children's director, I think mm-hmm. having children learning about Jesus and knowing who God is very important. I think that learning opportunity happens best for families on a Sunday morning.
Sure.
For most families anyway, because yeah. you're involved throughout the week with school and activities and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But I also think allowing opportunities outside of a Sunday morning to mm-hmm. be the hands and feet of Christ mm-hmm. in the world is also very important. Mm-hmm. So I think here, having an outreach director who allows those opportunities outside of a Sunday morning situation for mm-hmm. people to be out in the world.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, major shout out to Ann Swedich, who was in that position for a long time, and now Jenny McKenna, who's just stepped into that. I imagine we'll have Jenny on at some episode in the future. You know, one of the challenges that we face, you know, Katie, for instance, let's talk about Vacation Bible School for a minute. How many kids did we have enrolled at Vacation Bible School?
150.
Yep. How many volunteers did we have?
Oh, goodness. 60 to 65?
Yeah. See, we know those numbers right off the top of our heads because that is still what people want to hear. And so the challenge that we have, and this is a community challenge for our entire congregation, is transforming how we think about it from saying, we had 140 kids at VBS, that means it was successful, to saying, we had kids at VBS and they encountered Christ, and that means it was successful. And you know, the fact that we had 140 is an incredible byproduct of the resources that our community provides. But how do we transform the way that we think about that?
And I think, speaking to Vacation Bible School, just because that's on the brain anyway, since it was just a couple months ago. But I think, yes, being able to say we had this many kids, all of that's fabulous. But to me, having the letters coming home from parents are coming to me, emails being sent to me after the week is over, and parents saying, oh my gosh, we're still singing the songs. They're talking every day about how excited they are, and they want to go back, and that feeling of community and, you know, experiencing the love of God here. I think all of that is more a measure of success to me than how many kids were actually here.
Yeah, so I think that comes, we have to kind of rebrand the way we tell the story of what we're doing at these ministry events. Instead of saying this is how many were there, we say this is how it mattered. This is why it mattered.
And you know, I'll just be, I still struggle with this too. Like this, I don't want to sound like I have it all figured out, right?
Sure, none of us do. Yeah.
I show up to a Wednesday evening Advent or Lent service and there's 50 people here. And I'm like, oh man, are we being successful at this? Is this? And you know, just visually, when I see the numbers, that's my first gut instinct. And so I have to do those gut checks as well to say, no, that's not what this is about. How do we encounter Christ through this process?
Yeah, and I was definitely going back to this idea of like where we're putting our resources and how we're doing that. I think it sometimes comes into this unique idea that I think a lot of churches end up in this cyclical cycle of like, since all of our resources are going to Sunday morning, all of our efforts are volunteer based, we're asking them to serve on Sunday morning. And so everything is happening on Sunday morning. And then it's like, well, now live your life and we'll see you next week. And I'm not sure that really leads to this effectiveness in ministry. If we're asking people solely to serve the church worship service or the Sunday school service or the youth service and not asking them to serve their neighbor, then I'm not sure we're really going to get to that discipleship area that's the goal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I think we need to reframe that. The point of church is not to get people into Sunday morning. The point of Sunday morning is to get people into the world to share that message. And so that does require us to shift a lot of how we do things and shift how we approach ministry. So I was thinking about, so we thought about numbers. Are there any other pitfalls that we see and you know, wrong ways to measure effectiveness?
Wrong ways to measure effectiveness.
Well, I, for one, as a professional church worker, we're all professional church workers in a sense, you know, we all get paid to work for the church. So for me, sometimes measuring my own effectiveness can be on how busy I am in church. Yeah. How many things I've got going on equals I'm very effective right now.
Yeah.
So I become a very busy worker and not necessarily a good worker. Do you guys see that in your areas of life and ministry?
Katie, you're nodding.
Yes.
With a sense of affirmation. Yeah.
Yes. I think sometimes we can over-program a lot of things. When if you just strip it down to the meat and potatoes of what is the most important thing here, sometimes we just make it too extravagant and too big. And sometimes it just needs a, you know, little check-in and just make sure that you rein it down and pull it down into what really matters. So I think, yes, becoming too busy and having too many things going on, number one, might limit families, you know, and especially when dealing with children, might limit families to what we're only going to pick and choose one or two of the things, you know, that matter to us. So I just wonder sometimes if we do over program a little bit too much.
Yeah.
You know, this is something in my short time here at Word of Life, you know, it's been about a year and a half that I've been here. And so a lot of my roles have still been pretty observational. You know, I'm not really diving in to do the hard work of establishing new programs or anything like that yet. We're still kind of figuring out where we're going to be going and what the directions are going to be. But in my past life, working as a program leader for a camping program, for a summer camping program, I remember feeling at the time, it was like, okay, if I'm in bed before 11:30, I must not being effective. Like,
sure.
The point of being a camp program leader is to be up later than everybody, up earlier than everybody.
Sure.
Basically be exhausted all day because I'm working so hard behind the scenes and I'm always going. And it was one of the previous camp directors who was still talking to me who said that you're going to be dead by week three. Like you can't continue in that pattern.
Uh-huh.
You're going to get angry and exhausted and ineffective, and you've got to back up. And so it was her helping me establish, like, hey, I don't need to stay up until 11:30 talking with my counselor about this problem that they have. I can say, let's talk about this in the morning. You need to be with your kids right now. I can say, this can wait until the morning, or this is not a priority. So that was a hard lesson that I had to learn in that way, but it certainly was for me initially, if I'm not working harder than everybody else around me, I'm not being effective.
Yeah. I think it's easy for us all to fall into this like older brother and the prodigal son story situation where we confuse that like a life spent in service of God is the exact same as a life spent with God. And I think that kind of blurs the lines between those things. And we're thinking, well, obviously I'm a faithful Christian right now. Look how involved I am.
Mm-hmm.
Look how much I'm doing. Obviously, my heart connection with God is spot on right now because I am standing in front of people talking about Jesus. And, you know, there's plenty of times in Scripture where God is using people whose heart is not in the right place for good ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because good things are happening in ministry does not necessarily mean my heart is in the right place. Mm-hmm. And that we can confuse ourselves thinking busyness gets us there.
Yeah.
All right, so let's now think of what are the ways to measure good ministry? How do we, numbers, probably not necessarily the best way, busyness, and this is not just ministry, but maybe even like how we parent or how we are in marriage or how we are in the world.
Being busy in your family does not mean that you're having an effective marriage or an effective family life either.
So how do we measure, the effectiveness in a healthy or good way?
You know, so for me, the rebranding of the story, as you were talking about earlier, is really important. And so how do we think about ways that we encounter Christ through our experiences? And that, I don't know how to measure that. I think this is where I always struggle. You know, I once went to a summer camp, and one of the leaders who was on the summer camp staff was filling out a form that they had to fill out at the end of every trip. And, you know, they were trying to measure the effectiveness of the week of camp. And so one of the questions was, how many kids gave their life to Christ this week? It was a camp where that was a primary goal, was to help kids give their lives to Christ. And so he would always write, ask the Holy Spirit. Because it's like, even if a kid stands up and says, I give my life to Christ this week, I don't know what that's going to look like in a week or in a month or in a year. God is the only one who knows how that's working. And so in the same way, on a Sunday morning, I have no idea how many of the 400 people who are here on a Sunday morning encounter Christ.
Right?
I hope you all do. I hope that people come and experience Christ, if not through anything that we're doing, then at least through the actions of God and the sacraments and the actions of God and just being present in the space. But I don't know how to measure that.
I don't either.
I mean, that's what I want to be able to measure, but I don't know how to get to that.
Yeah, I think, even in Scripture, like Paul gives like this analogy of like Apollos or some guy planted the seed, Paul watered the seed, and God made it grow. And this is idea of like in children's ministry, if you're working on kids being like empathetic or giving, you may not actually see the fruits of your labor at all.
Right.
But that doesn't mean they're not there. 30 years from now, they could remember lessons, or not even remember lessons learned, but still have those lessons in their head. Like, none of us remember how we learned how to read, but it still is there, a part of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so by planting in those efforts and seeds and watering those seeds that somebody else planted, we're getting to that process, but it's hard to know where you are in that line.
Right.
And sometimes in the modern church, you don't necessarily get to see that because we're not having necessarily people here who are born here and will die at this church.
Right.
Mm-hmm. They're going to move.
Mm-hmm.
My kids in high school will go to college. And that is sometimes an effective way of like, how are they exploring their faith outside of our sphere of influence? when they're not here with us weekly, have we equipped them in a way to explore their faith outside of our presence? Mm-hmm. And I think that that is an interesting question when it comes to ministry.
Yeah, so there's a organization here in the Houston area called LEAD, L-E-A-D, and they exist to kind of help churches go through some of these processes. And they recently released some material called Faithful Metrics, mm-hmm. Which sounds just as paradoxical and somewhat lame as it probably does. But their ideas, you know, there are these metrics that we use, like worship attendance or like giving, where we measure it after it's already done, mm-hmm. right? So we see a Sunday's attendance after the Sunday's happened, and once we are measuring it, there's nothing we can do to change it. Right? Yeah. We can try to hope to change something for the future, but that number is already done. And so there, one of the things that they really talked about is trying to get us to think about what are ways that you can set goals that are in the future that you can try to achieve. How can you be faithful to things that are going forward, mm-hmm. Outside of just trying to get you know, numbers up or money up or something like that. Mm-hmm. How can you set a goal that is faithful to your mission as a congregation? You know, and I do believe that growth is a part of the mission of all churches, because mm-hmm. you know, we're called to make disciples. I think that's what we're going to do. But I don't think that we're measuring that growth in the most helpful way all the time, because we're using the wrong benchmarks. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, instead of how many people are in church on a Sunday, how do we measure numbers of people who have started going to a new Bible study, mm-hmm. or numbers of people who have encountered in some way a service opportunity that they hadn't had before? You know, that may or may not even be more effective, but mm-hmm. I think it starts to get at the heart of, mm-hmm. we want to be thinking about people who are living Jesus all week long, mm-hmm. rather than just coming for an hour on mm-hmm. Sundays.
Yeah, I think that gets us to the point that we mentioned earlier of getting people to serve in their community, and that sometimes comes, effectiveness will come in celebrating their service to mm-hmm. community. Sometimes as a church, we celebrate how well we are at affecting our church, like mm-hmm. how good you are as a Sunday school mm-hmm. teacher, how good you are as a greeter or worship, or, you know, worship leader, mm-hmm. and not necessarily celebrating in our congregation how good people are at collecting canned goods from the Montgomery mm-hmm. County Food Bank outside of our sphere of influence. And so I think part of that effectiveness comes to celebrating the ministry that's happening outside of our building, like looking yeah. and identifying it and bringing it to the congregation to show, like, this is what it looks like, that it looks like more than just, if you're not a good Sunday school teacher, then are you really serving?
Yeah.
You know, we need to be able to do a better job of, I think, showing that.
Right. Well, and how do you even define a good Sunday school teacher, right?
Absolutely. I
mean,
sure.
Does being a good Sunday school teacher mean that you have to have a teaching license and have a background in mm-hmm. you know, education and early childhood development and whatever? Or does being a good Sunday school teacher mean that you show up and you love kids and you let them experience faith alongside of you? Mm-hmm. And that is an entirely different... I mean, I know... I was raised by teachers. I love teachers. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of teachers who are terrible Sunday school teachers because they try to turn it into
a classroom,
right. And which is not always the most effective way to experience faith. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's great,
sure.
But it's not always the most effective way mm-hmm. to do that. And so we have to let people see that effectiveness in your personal life also does not automatically translate mm-hmm. to effectiveness in the church, because those are two different worlds too. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I might have just talked myself into a corner that I'm not going to be able to dig out of, but... we'll see.
No.
I think it's true. I mean, I look at our Sunday school teachers now. None of them are educators. They're all just people who love kids and
sure.
right.
want yeah. to help kids learn about God.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Now, to yeah. be clear.
That's interesting. Yes.
Teachers, come out and help yes, with Sunday school. Please. We need your gifts too.
Yes, absolutely.
But yeah, I mean, sure. you know, the person who is incredible in finance out in the world mm-hmm. might not want to be on the finance team at the church. They sure. might have other yep. gifts that they would be more effective
absolutely.
For.
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah, and that's a safer example. Let's go erase everything that I said about teachers. Teachers are the heart and soul of our country and our lives. Finance people, you are all other ones who are not living into your effectiveness.
You're going to need those finance people.
I'm going to need them too. All right. Erase the last 30 seconds. Just forget I ever said anything. Yeah.
We know what you mean.
Yeah. I'm not allowed to talk anymore.
So I'm thinking about, you know, in how do we translate this? And I'm looking at my own program here at Youth Ministry. And I think I've been here for 5 years. And I think we had grown our numbers. We had gotten to a better place. But in those growth had experienced some things where we were kind of a closed group, you know, like where we had grown to a place of somebody new coming in was hard to penetrate those circles. Like it was hard to, because they didn't have the same experience. They didn't have the same, you know, life story as everybody else in the group. So it was hard to step in and be immediately welcomed in. And so I was looking at that. I'm like, well, that's not a very good ministry. That's not a, like, it's great to have all these relationships, but if they're a closed relationship, I'm not sure that's what we want as a youth program. This idea of, like, if you haven't been here from the beginning, right, why bother coming at all? And so I was talking with some of even our youth leaders, and one of my kids, your intern, Daly, had this great idea for how we do our youth ministry and how we restructure some things. And so we call bridge building, that is a way for kids to connect with other kids within our own programming. So every week at youth group, we play a game and then we do bridge building. And so kids are randomly selected to be partnered with somebody else in the room and they have a short conversation. And for me, the conversation itself is kind of irrelevant. Mm-hmm. What matters is it's happening.
Yeah.
That a kid is connecting with a kid they may not connect with or talk with outside of that 1 5 minutes and find some commonality or common experience together. And so when I was thinking about that, I was thinking not just in itself, but what was neat about that is one of our kids was empowered to come up with an idea in ministry. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's what I really want to do in my program, is empower my kids to whatever you're passionate about, we want to help you be that to the fullest extent. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have a kid who's president of Best Buddies, that's a program that works with special needs, we want to say, how can we help you be the best buddies president you can be?
Right.
So I think part of effective ministry is, instead of saying, how can you kids help me do what I see as valuable for my program, is me saying, how can I help you do what you see as valuable in your lives and in our program? And that does come with that shift. So it's empowering others in what they see as valuable in their life.
Yeah. You know, the other piece of that, and this is what I've really appreciated watching this transition happen with you, Patrick, is that things have had to die, and to say that the best, for this transformation to take place, right? And so you had a successful, by many standard measures, program going, right? We had good numbers on Sunday nights. We had kids who were involved. We had, 30-some kids went to a mission trip, National Youth Gathering, with us last summer. So by many standards, this is a thriving and successful program. And yet you are willing to say, for this to continue to grow, for it to continue to be successful, something good has to die so that something better can take fruit. And I think that when we get caught up in numbers, we assume that we just have to hold on to it for as long as possible. I worked in a church when I was in seminary, and the average worship attendance on a Sunday morning was 10 on a good week. And, you know, was that congregation, they weren't doing anything out in their community. They were serving really just 2 or 3 families who had been there for the last 100 years in this little farming town. There were many other churches that were a drivable distance. You know, all of these people drove to work or drove to the store and went past other churches to go, other Lutheran churches even, to go there. So it's not like this was the only shop in town or anything. So, you know, they have this endowment that they're living off of. At that time, it was down to about $500,000. I'm like, is this effective ministry to continue to spend this for 10 people to come here and have their experience of what they think church should be and just slowly drain down this money? Or would effectiveness mean this building dies, right? We don't think about death as effective, but we're people who believe that resurrection comes out of death. And so for that effectiveness to take place, something has to die. And, and I love that in your program and in Word of Life in general, we have people who are willing to say, we trust that things have to die and that's going to be okay. And that out of that, we trust that God's going to bring new life and that that's going to be a new form of effectiveness. I don't know that we've gotten to the place of measuring our effectiveness in that way, but we do have a community that embraces that.
Yeah, I definitely see that, you know, part of the pitfalls of numbers, of busyness, of how much we've got going on, and if we're only clutching those so tight to our chest that we're unwilling to let them go to grab something better, then we're always going to, we're going to be slowly going downhill. I know, like, one of the, you know, dangers of a church is when your volunteer base starts telling you, whether directly or by their action, we're burnt out. Mm-hmm. We're burnt out on mm-hmm. what the programming here is offering us. We're burnt out on your service opportunities. We're burnt out on your programming. And they don't necessarily knock on your door and stand up in worship with their hand up and say, like, guess what? We're burnt out on what you're asking us.
Right.
They just stop.
That would be
coming.
Way easier if they
yeah.
did that.
Right. Yeah. They just stop showing up. They yeah. stop showing up to things that they volunteered for. Or it becomes harder and harder to get these things that we used to do volunteers for them. Mm-hmm. And that is telling you something. That's telling you this doesn't matter anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that needs to go away for something else to take place. But then that is scary. Because what if it's something mm-hmm. that we really like? Or what if it's something that we as a staff or as a leadership say, like, we saw its effectiveness. We saw how good it was. And it's easy to be like, well, now these people just need to come fill those roles. Instead yeah. of saying, what are the people, if they're saying no to this, what are they saying yes to in their lives? Mm-hmm. Or what is an opportunity that they want more of? And how can we partner with them? Mm-hmm. And how can we use their vision of their own vocational ministry to bring good and discipleship into their lives instead of asking them to do the opposite?
Yeah.
You know, our vision, and you just come be a part of it.
Right. I'm curious if you all have any experiences of this sort of thing outside of church, where perhaps you were working for a boss or a leader of some form, whether in a volunteer organization or an employment situation, where the leader was casting a vision for something that was completely different than what had been existing beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
And feeling the turmoil that mm-hmm. comes from being on the following side of that. Have you all had that experience? Maybe I'm describing something that's unique to me. That could be the case. But it just seems to me like, you know, so often we have leaders in the church, you know, sometimes this comes in the form of a youth director or a pastor or a council who are very intentionally trying to be in tune with where are we going 10 to 20 years from now? What is the future going to look like?
Mm-hmm.
And so while sometimes the leadership is not doing a good job of listening to the congregation and responding to their needs, sometimes the congregation is unwilling to listen to what the leadership is trying to say, we want to take you to a place of success. And sometimes the congregation isn't interested in that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are congregations who say, we don't want that kind of success. You know, I'm reminded of Jesus and the disciples, right? Jesus says, if you follow me, your life is going to be hard. Carry your cross. We just heard this this past week in the gospel lesson, right? You know, this is not going to be an easy road. And a lot of people leave.
Sure.
They're like, that's not what I signed up for. Yeah. I came to get some bread and to get fed, and I don't need all that. And, you know, so are we as leaders willing to live into that reality? Are we as a congregation mm-hmm. willing to live into that reality? Mm-hmm. That's just another side of that challenge that
sure.
that happens as well.
You asked for an example, and now I can totally think of one.
There you go.
So the second year I was teaching, I opened a brand new school.
Mm.
And so having a principal who I had never worked with before, yeah. I just went and applied and said, oh, that'd be fun to open a new school. Yeah, second year teacher, had no idea what I was getting myself into.
You're young and idealistic.
Right, absolutely. Yes. Like, yes. Everything's great. Like, it's going to be so fun. We didn't have any toilet paper the second day of school. It was quite interesting. But our principal that we had, who opened the school with us, had a very clear vision and was like, this is what we do. We do what's best for kids. This is, you know, and she had her whole system. I loved her. Like, I totally on board with her. Like, I will get on your train and I will go with you as long as you want to go. But we had many teachers who mm-hmm. were like, this is rough. I mean, and it was a rough school.
Mm-hmm.
And there were teachers that were jumping ship. Like, all yeah. They wouldn't buy in, they couldn't do it. It was hard.
Yeah.
It was hard work. But in the end, it was obviously very rewarding if you stayed on and you just kept trucking, you know. But it was hard. It was difficult.
Yeah. You know, and I've heard these stories from people who have been in the military and have mm-hmm. taken a new command post or who have been given a new commander in their post, people mm-hmm. in corporations with new CEOs. I mean, mm-hmm. this is not unique to church that we have a new follower and we have to live into a new vision, mm-hmm. But I think that we experience it in a particular microcosm because in the church, and particularly within our tribe, our Lutheran tradition, right, the congregation has a lot of authority.
Absolutely.
Appropriately so, right? We're a process where the congregation makes decisions together, but we also have said there are these particular people that have been set aside to work on behalf of us,
mm-hmm.
and there's a very fine line between in that trusting relationship and building that trust. And I think a lot of this conversation about effectiveness, we as leaders don't always have the same measures of effectiveness that our congregation has. Mm. And so I think a lot of times when congregations and leaders get into conflict, it's because they're trying to measure success by different standards. Mm-hmm. And they're not sharing the same vision. Now, I feel very fortunate that at Lord of Life, by and large, I feel like we are on the same page and we are measuring by the same standards. But that's not the universal case for the church.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we've obviously been talking a lot about church work.
Right.
And what it looks like to measure effectiveness within the areas of ministry. This is where we are. But I think all these things can apply to even our family systems, mm-hmm. you know, and how we measure effectiveness as parents, as spouses, as family. And ultimately, I think in those resistive moments, I'm sure many families, if mom and dad are like, we're putting away our phones and we're having a family dinner tonight, there's going to be resistance.
Oh, yes.
There's going to be
personally, yes,
conflict. There's going to be things like that. Even if I think from the outside looking in, even from parents could say, like, this is a better way to do this. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean it's going to be easy to get to that better place, because there's going to be resistance because our old family system will have to die to give birth to something new. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And sometimes that's scary. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's hard. But this only the only way you get something new is by doing something you haven't done. And if what you're doing is just not working, I think that is going to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
And if being stagnant is the goal, I think, and as a family, as a church, as a business, then I think maybe we need to reevaluate, like, what's the ultimate goal? If the goal is to stay the exact same as we are right now, then that is going to lead to death.
Mm-hmm.
No system, mm-hmm. no organism stays the exact same as they are right now and has sustained prolonged life and excitement.
Right.
It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we trick ourselves into thinking church is the exception or faith is the exception.
Yeah.
And it's just not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, how often, Patrick, you and I probably have this conversation more than Katie just because of age, but how often do we talk about confirmation and hear it referred to casually or jokingly as graduation, right?
Sure.
Thinking like, all right, I've graduated confirmation, I'm done with faith. Right, I don't have to think about it again. I can come back when my kid needs to go to confirmation when they're in like middle school, and we're all set, right? Because we've tricked ourselves into thinking that it's a static thing that we have learned all there is to know, and we don't need to come back. We don't need to worry about anything.
Yeah.
Instead of this long lived reality that needs to be ongoing. I mean, that's what you plant for us as in children's faith formation, right? That we get to grow that seed. We get to be Apollos in your example, or Paul. Whichever one did the water.
Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah.
We get to water, which is good. I don't like planting things.
Planting is fun.
Planting is usually like a one-time thing. Watering is the day-to-day stuff you have to do, though.
Yeah, but watering, you get to see things. You know, it starts to grow. You know?
But the cool thing is, if you're in...
I'm not a gardener. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I've only been here for a year and a half, but like I almost cried the day I walked into confirmation Sunday school the first day, because those were my sixth graders now in seventh grade. So you do get to see throughout the years, you know, the watering happening, and you get to, you know, it can be emotional.
It can be.
Sweet little babies.
You, growing you water into their big souls people. With your tears. Yeah, it's a beautiful image.
Well, I think on that note.
And Pastor David drove us right off the rails once again.
I think that's a good place for us to stop right now, and we'll meet you next week with new thoughts on faith, life, ministry, and kind of what it means to be active in our own faith and families.
There you go.
All right, thank you so much for listening.
Have a great day.
Thanks. Thanks for tuning in to the Beyond Sunday podcast, where we will have a new episode for you every Monday morning. Please take the time to rate and review, and please subscribe.